Hello, I'm Nick Spencer, and this is Bookends, a short reflection on the books and the ideas that we've been talking about in this series of Reading Our Times. Well, it is that, but because this is the first time I've done one of these, I think I should say a little bit about what Reading Our Times is and why we're doing it. The podcast has been going for nearly 5 years now, and earlier this summer, we put out a survey to get an idea of what listeners like and what they don't like about it. Thank you very much if you were one of those who responded to it. What we found out was that, gratifyingly, the things that people liked about Reading Our Times were the things that we were trying to achieve. 90% of people said that it challenged them to think about new topics, and the same proportion said that it encouraged them to listen to other people's perspectives, even if they disagree. Why is this important? Well, today there's a pretty relentless struggle to capture and monetize our attention. And the world is run by algorithms that are designed to feed us more of the kind of content we already consume. All of this leaves us in danger of slowly closing down our mental horizons. And the result, you won't be surprised to hear, is to trap and to toxify our mental worlds. It denies us the space and the time and often the generosity to think. Reading Our Times tries to be an antidote to this. We want to encourage an open, honest, attentive and respectful engagement in the world of ideas, an attempt to broaden our intellectual horizons. This, I think, is a good objective in itself, but there's a deeper logic to what we're trying to do here, and that leads me on to one of the other results from the survey. 85% of people who responded said that Reading Our Times has led them to consider their views on what it means to be human on a deeper level, and this is central to what we're trying to achieve. There is no view from nowhere. Everyone approaches the world from a particular position, and Reading Our Times is no different. The podcast is a project from the think tank Theos, for which I'm senior fellow, and it's firmly grounded in the tradition of Christian humanism. This is sadly unfamiliar to too many people in the UK, but it's a bit better known on the continent where Catholic Christianity has kept it alive. This tradition encompasses many themes, but for Reading Our Times, it means three things in particular. First, it takes the Christian scriptures seriously, but as a foundation for intellectual inquiry, not as the end of it. One of the criticisms that Richard Dawkins and the New Atheists levelled at Christianity is that faith was a cop-out. It served primarily to deter rather than to stimulate intellectual reflection. And if I'm being absolutely honest, I have met believers for whom that is undoubtedly true. However, it's not true for all of them, and it's definitely not true for the tradition of Christian humanism, which has its origins, centuries ago, in the Christian openness to the world of classical thought and literature. As then, so now. Reading Our Times is committed to a tradition of rigorous, open, and respectful intellectual inquiry, precisely because that is what it means to be a Christian humanist. There are some interviewees that I've engaged with over the years with whom I have disagreed. Daniel Dennett would be an obvious recent example. But I've also benefited greatly from reading his works and from talking and listening to him. In this series, I wasn't entirely persuaded by Michael Banner's case for state-based reparations for slavery. The case of localised institutional reparations is a different one. But Michael's contribution to this debate did make me think. In particular, it made me think about the way in which we are so often willing to bask in the reflected glory of our past, and yet we hide away when it comes to its crimes and its evils. I do still think that imposing a large-scale, effectively indiscriminate compensation on the British public would only serve to exacerbate divides and to perpetuate resentments, rather than to effect reconciliation and better relationships. But I also think that highlighting the British slavery crimes from the 18th century cannot simply be dismissed as wokery or raking over dead ashes. In a similar way, while I don't like discourse around identity politics, the kind of discourse that's central to the woke movement, Nor am I that impressed with some of the criticisms of wokery from the right. That was why I found Susan Nyman's critique of wokery from the socialist left so refreshing. Susan insisted on the moral significance of universalism, on the importance of solidarity that cuts across identity markers, and on the reality of justice, which can't simply be reduced to power games. And that insistence is really powerful. And it made me realise that, as Susan put it, left does not equal woke, and that rejecting wokery does not automatically place you in the arms of the populist right. You may disagree, but even if you do, I hope that listening to Michael Banner and Susan Nyman stimulated your opinions. Either way, these are, I hope, the kind of intellectual conversations we're trying to model in Reading Our Times. Listening, engaging, agreeing and disagreeing respectfully. We live in an age that needs that kind of approach, and I'm convinced that that is precisely what the Christian humanist tradition offers. So that's my first point. Christian humanism is about adopting an intellectually open posture. But it's not just that. Christian humanism believes and is committed to certain things based on its reflection on the life and teachings of Christ. Central among these is the importance it accords to the conception of the human in our thinking. We are particularly focused on defining and defending the dignity, rationality, morality, and the sociality of the human person. This isn't for a second to deny our basic physical, material, or biological makeup, but it is to insist that we cannot just be reduced to that. We are complex, multi-layered, endlessly fascinating, emergent beings. We saw this in my conversation with Elora Finlay and Julian Hughes about Sister Dying, which took place just before the parliamentary debate in November. Much of that debate, and indeed much of our conversation, explored ideas about pain and palliative care and Canada and the record of other countries that have introduced assisted dying. But beneath all this was a set of ideas about the meaning and the moral and existential weight we attach to various words. Choice, autonomy, compassion, vulnerability, above all, dignity. Ultimately, how we think about each of these concepts will shape how we think about the whole debate. Our conversation was an attempt to dig around the roots here. Assisted dying rather obviously lends itself to such a discussion, but listeners of the podcast will know that over the last couple of series, I've ended all my interviews with that key question. What does what we've been talking about say about the human condition? About who we are? Whether we are thinking about the nature of the West, as in my conversation with Joe Quinn, or what we really owe to the Enlightenment, as with my conversation with Jonathan Clarke, so often the debate shifts subtly onto the question of who we are. Increasingly, I'm of the opinion that this is fundamental to all the important political, economic, social, ethical, and philosophical issues that we face today. So, we have a commitment to open dialogue and a commitment to the importance and the dignity of the human person. Third and finally, the podcast and the entire Christian humanist tradition in which it stands argues for the relevance and significance of religious belief and commitment in the modern world. This can be a bit of a blind spot for many Western intellectuals today, as we witnessed recently in some of the cruder comments about the role of religion in the assisted dying debate. All too often, secular-minded intellectuals write off religious commitments as irrelevant or stupid or harmful without actually ever having read a word of theological ethics, for example. Yet, like it or not, we are a religious species. My conversation with Harvey Whitehouse brought this home clearly. If we're talking about those intuitive features of religiosity, he told me, there's very little evidence that those things are becoming less prominent today. Harvey is not a religious man himself. Indeed, as he told me, he started out quite hostile. And nor does he imagine that human religiosity takes the same form from one age to another. But the key point stands. We shouldn't make the mistake of believing that my little corner of elite metropolitan London speaks for the human species as a whole. Whether you're looking at the infant brain, or at the remains of ancient civilizations, or indeed at about 85% of the world's population today, it's clear that we are a religious animal. Charles Taylor touched on this point in my conversation with him about poetry and its cosmic connections. What does poetry offer people today in a way that they can't or won't get from other sources? They're getting intimations of immortality, he said, intimations that they're trying to articulate. And it's in that very articulation that the connection is made. As he said, it's a statement of connection rather than simply a description of something out there. You can't force this. If you don't get it, you don't get it. As Taylor went on to say, if you don't share any of those intimations, it all sounds like so much raving or like so much totally subjective verbiage. Occasionally, that might just describe what listeners to Reading Our Times think about some of the contributors. So much raving, so much totally subjective verbiage. But only occasionally, I hope. Because I think, and I certainly hope, that the rest of the time, we're in the business, to pick up Taylor's words, of recovering something for you, for the reader, or more precisely, for the listener. Recovering and discovering a world of different, stimulating and provocative books written by authors who care about ideas. Hopefully, this series has given you a bit of space to explore that world, and I look forward to spending time with you again in the next series. Goodbye.